Okay. Good morning. Good to see you all. At my own peril, I say we have a rather brief duff this morning. We are kind of in between stages. We're now at the second mission of the third perek. The third perek is, we noted, Elohim Halokin, is begins with a list of people who are deserving of Malkus, which is odd because it's not a comprehensive list, so it seems somewhat arbitrary. But we've tried to suggest that there are some thematic connections between the Mishnayot. So the first Mishnah was a list of prohibitions, some of which include karet, including with Malkus, and some which don't, but all seem to be, bless you, moral absolutes to some degree. Whether it's in the realm of arayot or ma'achalot asurot, forbidden sexual relationships, or forbidden foods, they are forbidden across the board. Shratzim, nobody can eat them. Relationship with particular relatives, nobody can violate that. And then we had about four duff of discussion about various iterations of prohibitions. There's a requirement for there to be an azhara in the Torah. It needs to be a warning somewhere that shows that this is not just a kind of quid pro quo, but it is a morally problematic. And it's not just you can commit this and get a punishment and it's all equal. There is moral damage done, and the punishment is meant to either rehabilitate or remind you of the prohibition. We had discussions of what about cases of cardinal ase, where you are told beforehand to do something positive and then you violate it and then you go back to the norm. Do you get malchus if you make that violation? We spoke about lav hanitak la'ase, when there's no previous command, but you violate this. Notar is a central example. You leave over sacred meat and don't eat it. You have to burn it. Do you get malchus, or does that take the punishment off the table? We had lav shein bo ma'aseh, what if I don't have to do anything active? And we had all those carve-outs. Then we turned our attention to the case of shratzim, where we said, having given all the carve-outs, if you eat one of these shratzim, there are six prohibitions involved, and you might get six sets of malchus, just in case you thought we were queasy about malchus. And then we turned to the second Mishnah, which is what we're responding to now, which has a list of what we might call whatever the opposite of moral absolutes are, moral conditionals, we might say. For example, if you eat bikurim before the recital has been made, you get malchus if you're a kohen. This was important. Last week, only kohanim eat bikurim. And if a kohen eats the bikurim before the recital was made, they get malchus. Now, this food is not prohibited food. They could eat it in 2 minutes. We said in the same Mishnah, we've got if you break the bones of a korban pesach, it's not prohibited food. You're allowed to eat it. You just have to eat it slowly. In addition to korban pesach and bikurim, there are discussions of maaseh sheni, which you can eat in Yerushalayim, but if you eat it outside Yerushalayim, you get in trouble, kochim kalim, kochim kochim. If you're a Kohen and you eat it in the wrong place, if you're a Zar and you're permitted to eat it, all this kind of eating too quickly or eating in the wrong location, there are still violations involved, which is kind of tightening the screws of the kind of moral laws we're interested in enforcing. And as we continue through the Perek, we'll get even closer to home, transitioning into tattooing one's body or tearing one's skin as a form of mourning, meaning it's my body. And we're getting closer and closer to saying, no, it is not your body, it is not your time, it's not your space. You live in a world which is contextually tied to other people and filled with responsibilities for which we are willing to enforce moral law, at least as we describe it here, which we should attend to. So, in the midst of our discussion last week, we said one thing in the Mishnah that got us responding, which was, Bikurim, if you eat it before the recital, you get lashes. And we said, whose opinion is that? Anyone remember whose opinion it was? Whose opinion keeps cropping up? Close? There you go. Rabbi Akiva. It was close because it's Rabbi first. That's Rabbi Akiva. We said it's Rabbi Akiva's view. And the Gemara said, hold on a minute. It's Rabbi Shimon's view. And I know it's Rabbi Shimon's view because he said that explicitly. And then we said, yeah, I'm trying to say Rabbi Akiva holds like Rabbi Shimon, and that's what appears in the Mishnah. And then we spent the whole of last week's daf saying, how do we know it's Rabbi Shimon's view? And we quoted a whole long braita where his view comes up in the braita, where he says, if you have Bikurim before the recital, you get Malkus. And he said, and how do I know that? Kavachoma for Maaser. Because Maaser you can't eat outside, so it can't just be outside when it says there's a prohibition on Bikurim. It must be something extra. So if you have it inside, but before the recital. And then he had five steps of Kavachomas that lead you all the way to, if you have an Ola, basically you get punished five times because you're outside the wall, before Zrika, outside the Azara, you're a Zara and not a Kohen, and there were five. Either way, There were five, and we said, hold on a minute, how can you get these malchus out of a kal v'chomer? We said, it doesn't mean malchus, it means just an irsa. We said, okay, but the perek begins, elu hen halokin, these are the people who get lashes. You're now going to tell me the whole thing is just a metaphor? So he said, no, and that's how we begin Yudchet Amud Aleph at the top in the green. It's not really kal v'chomer series, but he's saying these kal v'chomers embedded in this pasuk are real exegetical limudim, not just implications, because there's an extra verse. Michti, let's see, Ktiv, it says, Vaveta sham v'achal defnei Elokech v'markom. It says about all these korbanot, all these circumstances, whether it's Bikurim, or Maseh, or Ola, or Shlamim, or Ola, we said, Shlamim, or Asha. Any of those cases, it says, you should eat them sham, there, in the place they're meant to be eaten. Lichtav rachmana lo tuchal le'ochlam. And then the Torah goes on to say, you shall not eat them out of their place. Midah mefarshibu rachmana lamali. Why does the Torah repeat itself? Ela liyachudei lehu lave lechol chad v'chad. To say that there's a prohibition in each of these cases. It says it's not a kal v'chomer. So full stop, bottom line. For Reb Shimon, in that long brighter, there is a possibility of getting malchus for eating Bikurim before the recital, and a possibility of getting malchus in all the other cases. And when we said, oh, he doesn't mean malchus because it's a chal v'chomer, he just means there's a prohibition, that is not true. We push aside that possibility and assume he says, literally, you get malchus in each case. Gufa. The Gemara now returns to a point that Rava made, which will lead us over to the next side, which is Rava said, Zar sha'ochal min ha'ola lefnei zrika chutz l'choma l'Rav Shimon lo kechamesh. This was like the most accumulated case with the most prohibitions for Reb Shimon on the basis of that brayta, which is if you're a czar, what is a czar? A non-Kohen. So if you're a commoner and you eat from an ola, who can eat from an ola?
Nobody.
So you eat from something that nobody can eat from. Lifnei zrika, before the blood is sprinkled, who can eat before zrika?
Nobody.
Chutz l'chomer, and you eat the ola outside of the wall of Yerushalayim. Who can eat the ola outside the wall of Yerushalayim? Nobody. So you do the most extreme case where this is prohibited across the board. Kondra b'shimon, you get five malchus, and the five are, and I've got the list here now. One is outside the wall of Yerushalayim. One is before Zrika. One is because you're not a Kohen, you're a Zara, you couldn't eat it even if it was after Zrika, even if it was inside the wall. One is because it's outside the Azara, even inside the city, but outside the Azara would be a problem. And one because it's an Ola. And even a Kohen can't eat that. So you're in a position where you're a Zara. So even if you even if this wasn't an Ola, it was a different kind of Kajib Kajim, you couldn't be able to eat it. The Kohen can't eat it. It's outside the wall. It's outside the Kalayim. It's Lifnei Zrika. There are five different prohibitions involved. And the Gemara says, well, why stop there? We're now going to have four suggestions for other Isurim that might be involved. And we are going to reject each of them. And the theme of each of them is going to be, we're not including these because that would be a conditional prohibition where it was mutter and now it's not. And here we're just dealing with an exceptional case where this is a moral absolute for Reb Shimon and it actually belongs in the previous Mishnah discussion rather than here. But we're dealing with Rava's point. So there are five malchus. First one on the line is Le Rebbe Shimon. V'lilki nami mishun v'zar le'yochal ki kol Hashem. They should also get a sixth prohibition. Because there's a pasuk in Shmo that says, a czar cannot eat anything kodesh. This is kodesh, he's a czar, so give him six. Said, no, that only applies to when it's fitting for a Kohen to eat. This is an ola, so a Kohen can't eat it, so you can't add this. This is a moral absolute, where nobody's allowed to eat this ola. So don't give me conditionals. First one on the line now is Vililki, five lines up. Vililki, now it's fine, so don't give him that. Vililki mishum. Why not give them lashes for the following pasuk? Uvasar basadeh treifa lo tochelu. Meat that is a treifa in the field you shall not eat. And the assumption of this verse is anything outside of its boundary. Otherwise, why add the word basadeh? Where are you not allowed to eat a treifa? Anywhere. So why say basadeh? It must be that something that is out of bounds, you get punished. That's the assumption. So this is an ola outside the Yerushalayim, so it can't be eaten. Kevin Shiatsa Basakhus Mechisato and Esar, it should be prohibited, so give him six lashes. Hanimili Hekhid Bifnim Chazi. That's only when it would be permitted within somewhere if it's outside of bounds. Hakid Bifnim Namna, this is an Ola, no one can eat it anywhere. So this doesn't add up. There's no six lashes from that. Okay. Vilokinam Rabalaza. So why not whip him for what Rabalaza says? Don't Rabalaza says Lo Yochal Ki Kodesh. Talking in the context of Notar, it says you shall not eat it after it's become notar, because it's Kodesh. Just for the record, this is the quickest we've done in Amud so far. And we're on Yudchet over the page. Kol shebekodesh pasul ba'akatav liten lo ta'aseh alachilato. So according to Rabbi Elazar, the fact that it says about notar, you shall not eat it because it's kodesh, it gives a reason. It's kodesh. So anything kodesh, there should be an extra prohibition. So this is ola, it should be kodesh. Pushback, hanimili hechid kodem sulachazi. That's only in the case of notar, it's kodesh, and it was permitted, and now it's prohibited. So that's, again, a conditional moral, which is not in our context. It was never permitted. Third line. So give him lashes for this teaching of Rabbi Elazar. The Tanya, it says in a brighter Rabbi Elazar Omer. Rabbi Elazar says, Kol shu b'chlil tiyeh liten lotase lechalato. Anything that is klil tiyeh. Klil tiyeh means it should be completely burnt up. Is an ola completely burnt up? Yeah. So this, and this is not a conditional verse. It doesn't say, oh, because it was a notar, or because it was, belongs to the Kohanim, or it was outside of its space. Just says anything completely burnt up, you get lashes. Sounds like it's a moral absolute. In Achinami, the Gemara says, yes, you're right, you would get six. Varava mahai krakama. Rava just meant you get five on the basis of that one pasuk. But of course you can get, there are other prohibitions involved in eating an ola, even if you're a czar and it's outside the choma. But in the context we said, on the basis of one verse, you get five lashes. Full stop. And now we're going to respond to another intimation that came up in that brighter. And we're going to have a statement and then completely correct it. So, Amar Rav Gidl, Amar Rav. This is going into the yellow. In the name of Rav, Rav Gidl said, Kohen, she'achal machate va'asham lefnei zrika. So you take the korbanot Yerushalayim, you'd slaughter the animal, catch the blood in a bowl, then you'd have to sprinkle the blood on the mizbech before anything can happen in terms of eating. So the chata and the asham blood had been collected in the bowl, but it had not been sprinkled yet. And the Kohen got hungry, said, I'm not hanging around. There's a huge line. I want to eat right now. And he starts eating. Loke. Rav Gidl Amar Rav says, you get lashes right then and there. And he says, this kind of fits with our discussion. We're talking about eating too early or eating in the wrong place. This is not prohibited meat. He can eat it in 4 minutes if he just waits for the line and he's eating too hastily. And you get lashes. My Tama, what's the reason, says the Gemara? Dama kra, because it says in the Pasuk. And see if you can find where there's any negative prohibition here. The Pasuk says, Achlo otam, you shall eat them as the Kohen, asher kupar bahem, once they have atoned with them. Lacha kapara in, lifne kapara lo. Sounds like you can only eat them once they have atoned, meaning the Zerika is an act of atonement. So that's when you can eat it, but you can't eat it before that. Does that sound like a prohibition? What does it say? You shall eat it. It sounds like it's in the positive. So now the government is going to say, yes, that's true.
Asher is when
right, when they have atoned with them. So once you've sprinkled, you can eat it. And the question is, well, where's the prohibition here? It's giving me an instruction, which implies that I shouldn't have it before. And then the Gemara says, Lav haba mechlal aseh, lav hu. Any negative implication of a positive instruction is a crime. If we say, you can park here on Sundays between 11 and 1, it's understood it's a crime to park there when it's not between 11 and 1 on Sundays, which is a reasonable claim. Having said that, the Gemara is going to completely dismiss that possibility. Mitiv Rava, Rava says, hold on a minute. Let's get completely off the beaten track and talk about kashrus for a second. The Torah says, these are the animals that you can eat. Split hooves and chew the cud. What's the implication of that? Don't eat anything that doesn't have split hooves and doesn't chew the cud. And yet, Oto Tochelu, it says, eat these, Vein Behem Achevit Tochelu, implying you shouldn't eat anything else. Ve'id Kedam Art. And if it's true that implications of positive instructions are prohibitions, why et zelo tochelu lamali? Why does it need to say, and these you shall not eat? Obviously, it says, eat these, makes sound like you shouldn't eat anything else. So why do I need to be told, don't eat anything else? Ella. So we're now going to completely re-understand. And this is an astonishing rewriting. So far, what Rav said, according to Rav Gidl, is if a Kohen eats food that he is allowed to eat in 5 minutes and he eats it too early, he will get lashes because the verse implies that negatively. And what he's about to say is, okay, that's not what I meant. What I meant was if a non-Kohen eats it before Zerika, they don't get lashes, which is quite radically different because the Kohen who was permitted to eat it, he suggested maybe gets lashes by implication. And we said implication in this context doesn't work. So it's okay. If a non-Kohen eats it beforehand, they are potter. They don't get anything. So it seems like this food now, nobody gets lashes for eating shlamim before Zrika. It's not a good idea, but there's no crime. Why? Good question. Let's see if we've got any attempt. Rav Gidl Amar Rav. This is what Rav Gidl Amar Rav meant. First word in the learning is Itmar, and we're kind of redoing what we think he said. Zar Sha'acha Mechatad V'Asham Lefnei Zrika. If a non-Kohen ate from these korbanot before Zrika, which a Kohen is allowed to eat soon, but they, this Zar eats it, Pater, they do not get lashes. It is a crime, but a non-punishable crime if you eat this meat. Now, I guess the logic is, when is this person going to be allowed to eat this meat? Right, this person can never eat this meat. Can somebody eat this meat? Yeah. Right, so it's kind of not—it's not a moral absolute because somebody can eat it, but it also is a moral absolute for me because I can never eat it because I'm a czar. So I'm kind of in this in-between territory where it's not quite this is treif for everybody, and it's not quite if I wait a few minutes I can have it. So I'm kind of out of the parsha. This isn't food to me. It is off bounds. But we don't enforce moral law in this context, and we could spend some time digging into why that carve-out makes sense. B says, how do I know that you're pater? And he's going to base it on the pasuk. My Tama, Damakra, the verse says, Achlo atama sheku parbehem, the Kohanim should eat them when they've atoned. And then it follows up and says, Zar lo yachal, but a Zar can't. So he's going to tie those two parts of the pasuk together. It says, Kohanim should eat it once it's been atoned, and a Zar can't, which makes it sound like a Zar can't eat it once a Kohen can eat it. But before that, it's kind of, nobody gets anything, is what it sounds like. My time, Damakar, Rachlo, Tamashekub, Abraham. The verse says about Kohanim, you should eat it once you've atoned. Kol Hegde, Krinabe, Rachlo, Tamashekub, Abraham. Whenever you're in the context of now the Kohen can eat it because it's atoned, Karinabe, Vazalu, Yachal, Kodesh, we say Azar shouldn't eat it. Kol Hegde, Lo Karinabe, Rachlo, Tamashekub, Abraham. And whenever the Kohen can't eat it yet, Lo Karinabe, Zalu, Yachal, full stop. It is not in the context where a czar will get punished either. Full stop. Now we return to the subject of the Mishnah, which we got sidelined because of Reb Shimon's brighter. Turn Bikurim, we said, need to have the recital in order for you to eat them. Now, a couple of background details, which are going to be necessary for finishing this Amud, which is there are two seasons in which Bikurim can be brought. When is the first time you can bring Bikurim? Shavuos is the first time, and Sukkos is an inflection point. Any time between Shavuos and Sukkos is called Zman Simcha. That's called a time of joy. And in a time of joy, if you bring Bikurim, you've got the recital, the Mikra Bikurim. You can bring it after Sukkos for another couple of months, but at that point, it's not called Zman Simcha, and you bring the Bikurim, and there's no Kriya. You're not allowed to do a Kriya. So you just bring the Bikurim, which means, obviously, if you bring them and you don't say a Kriya, you can eat them, because there's no Kriya. So we're going to have a question. What happens if I separated my Bikurim before Sukkot, and then I didn't get to bring it until after Sukkot? Does it need a Kriya or does it not need a Kriya? So we'll come to that in this case. And there is the view we had in our Mishnah, the view of Rabbi Kiva, the view of Rabbi Shimon is, if you don't have a Kriya when you're meant to have a Kriya, it is a crime to eat these Bikurim. There is another view, however. Amar Rabbi Elazar, Amar Rabbi Hoshea. In the name of Rabbi Hoshea, he said, Bikurim, in the context of Bikurim, hanacha ma'akevet bahem. You have to place them down. And again, what would happen was, I'm sure some of you are familiar with the description of the parade of the Bikurim. They'd bring the Bikurim to Yerushalayim. There'd be all these celebrations and parties and festivities and fruit. And then you'd bring it to the Azara, where the temple courtyard is. And there were going to be three stages. That's called Re'iyat Haheichal. You bring the fruit into the Azara. It's now seen the temple. And for someone, that's all you need, but not yet. So that's one stage. The next stage is Hanacha. You put it down in front of the Mizbeach. And then there's the Kriya. And for our Mishnah, you can't eat it until you've had the Kriya. But we're about to have a view that says as soon as you put it down, you can eat. You've got to imagine these kind of vociferously hungry Kohanim. Like, I can't wait 3 seconds to read it. You put it down, let's eat. So, Rav Hoshea says, Bikurim Hanacha Ma'akeva, but him putting it down in front of the altar, that is necessary, and if you don't do that, you get lashes. Kriya in makevet behem. Kriya is nice, but you don't need it. And again, if you're ever asked to give a Torah or think about Bikurim, these are all interesting observations about when gratitude is manifest. Is it when you dedicate something, you put it down? Is it when you verbally say what you're grateful for? Or is it just bringing it to the Bet Mingdash? But for Rav Hoshea, putting it down is the issue, not reading. And now we're going to question that. Me and Rabbi Lazar, didn't Rabbi Lazar really say that in the name of Hoshea, that putting it down is necessary? I've got a proof that he thinks Kriya is necessary. What's my proof? I'm Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Hoshea, the same people. Rabbi Lazar said the name of Hoshea. Hifish Bikurim Kodim Lachag. If you set aside your Bikurim before Sukkot, Vavralei Machag, and then Sukkot passes, Yirakvu. You have to leave them to rot. You can't eat them because you can't do the Kriya. And it sounds like for Rabbi Hoshea, Kriya is ma'kevet. If you can't read it, it's a crime to eat it. That's what it sounds like. So don't tell me hanacha ma'kevet and Kriya is not ma'kevet. And this is until I was thinking about this over Shabbos, always struck me as somewhat irrational, this principle. And then I thought of a funny example that may make it no more rational, but at least comprehensible. He said, my love, why is it that you have to let them rot? First of all, it's because you can't read. Why, contra Hoshea, should you let them rot? Just because you can't read. It sounds like Kriya is Markevet. And this is going to be the response of the Gemara. Kedar Rabzera, first word in line is Rabzera. Am Rabzera, Rabzera said, Kol ha-ra'ui la-bila, ein bila ma-kevet bo-vechol, she'en ra'ui la-bila bi-ma-kevet. Anyone familiar with that principle that comes up a couple of different places in Shas? Anything, so bila, in the case of a korban mincha, korban mincha is made of flour, water, salt. Sometimes there's a nisuch ha-yayin with it, but in its ingredients is flour, salt, water. And does it need to be mixed? Any of you ever bake? Do any of you bake? Right, so you've balula b'shem, it has to be all mixed up. So it turns out that it doesn't actually have to be mixed up. If you didn't mix it up, it's fine. It's not going to be very well baked if it's like that. If you didn't mix it up, it's okay. But there is also a case where if you put too much flour in, it would be impossible to mix up. It's possible. And I'm going to say, well, why? If you don't need to mix it up, who cares if it's non-mixable now? It says, well, all we need is the ability to mix it up. If you mix it, doesn't matter. But kol ra'ui labila, anything that could be mixed, ein bila ma'kevet, the fact that it doesn't not mix doesn't matter. But anything that's not ra'ui, anything you couldn't mix, is a problem. Which I thought was strange. Either you require it to be mixed or not. And then the kind of metaphor I was thinking was the first couple of years I was here, I did not give a Gemara share. I didn't know if it was interesting to people or popular at all. Why? I stressed myself. And a couple of people said that we need to have a Gemara share in shul. And I said, well, would you come? I said, no, but we need to have a Gemara share in shul. We cannot have a shul, a young Israel, with the rabbi doesn't give a Gemara share. I'm like, but you're not going to come. You want me just to sit here and talk to myself? Yes, that's what we need. So a Gemara share is ma'akevet. People going is not ma'akevet. Meaning, it needs to be able, I need to have the option to mix. I need to have the option. I want to wake up on a Sunday morning and think, I could go to the Gemara share. I'm not going to ever, but I need to know I've got the option. So it's the same principle that I need to know I could mix it, but you don't have to mix it. But if it's impossible to mix, what good is that shul to me? What good is this mincha to me? So in that context, this is applied to the Bikurim, meaning Kondra Hoshea before Sukkot, when you can be Makri, you don't need to do the Kriya, it's not Ma'akevet. But once you've left it over till after Sukkot, and now it's impossible, Kriya Ma'akevet, meaning it's a situation where you couldn't read, and that makes this impossible, and you've got to let the food rot. Which again, you could put a lot of thought into. Why is it not a necessity in the context when the option of verbalizing your gratitude to do it, but when it's impossible to verbalize your gratitude, we say this doesn't work. So again, if we had more time, we could plumb the depths of that. Full stop. First word in the line is Bila. There's a little hyphen there. And they're midway through Rav Acha Rav Yaakov Matnila. I think we're going to have a record here. So Rav Acha Rav Yaakov taught Kedrabi Asiyam Rav Yochanan in the name of Rav Yochanan the same teaching that Hanacha is Ma'akevet. You need to put it down in front of the Mizbeach before you eat it. But Kriya, you don't have to put it down. He had that teaching in the name of Rav Yochanan. But the Kashalei to Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yochanan. He heard the opposite teaching in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. And you're now trying to figure out, what was Rabbi Yochanan's view? Does Rabbi Yochanan follow our Mishnah, that you need to read it before you eat it? Or does he follow the Rabbi Hoshea, that you need to put it down before you eat it? And I've got a teaching that says you need to put it down. And reading is not important. However, Mi ar Rabbi Yochanan bikurim hanacha ma'kevet in kriya in ma'kevet. Did Rabbi Yochanan really say hanacha is ma'kevet in kriya isn't? First one line is bahen, right next to where it says reishin alav. V'ha b'aymenei, there was a question posed. Remember, Rabbi Asi m'Rabbi Yochanan, from Rabbi Asi to Rabbi Yochanan, and this is the answer he gave, which tells me he thinks kriya is ma'kevet. You know, to read, not put down. The question was, bikurim e'amatai m'torim l'kohanim. When can kohanim start to eat the bikurim? And Rabbi Yochanan Amalei said as follows, first of all, in his Haru'iyin. He says, Haru'iyin l'kriya, if it's before Sukkot, where you can do the kriya, m'shikara aleihem. They can eat it from the time of kriya. What does it sound like for Rabbi Yochanan? What is ma'akevet? Kriya is ma'akevet. It needs to be read. That's what it sounds like. V'she'in ra'uyin l'kriya, and if it's after Sukkot, so you can't do kriya, m'sharo p'nei abayit. It's once it sees the temple. So, when it's not kriya time, what do you need to, before you can eat it, what does the bikurim need to do? Just arrive. So, putting it down is never required, and beforehand, reading is required. So, this is in direct contrast in two ways to the teaching that we had, that hanacha is ma'akevet and kriya is not. Hanacha doesn't seem to feature for Rabbi Yochanan in this answer, it just needs to be appear at the temple. And kriya, if you can do it, it sounds like you have to. So kriya is ma'akevet. So the Gemara says, kashya, first of all, the line is l'kriya. So kashya kriya akriya, kashya hanacha anacha. Rabbi Yochanan has two different statements here. One way he says kriya is required, and one way he says it isn't. And hanacha is also a problem. There's one case where he says hanacha is required, and one place where it isn't. What is his view here? Kriya akriya lo kasha. First one, the line lo kasha. It says the contradiction between whether you have to read or not, that's not a problem because he's actually reciting the teaching in the name of two different teachers. Harib Shimon, one is a view of Rib Shimon from our Mishnah who says kriya is ma'akevet, and that's where he's teaching Rib Shimon's view. Harabanan, and in another context, he's teaching the view of the Rabbanan, or the view we had above, Rav Hoshio says kriya is not ma'akevet. So he was just teaching in class. This is Rav Shimon's view. This is Rabbanan's view. And somebody came in the middle and heard him giving this teaching and said, "Oh, that's Rabbi Yochanan's view." It's reasonable to share different views of different people at different times. Hanacha nacha lamin yokasha, and the idea that you have to put it down, otherwise you can't eat, is also not a problem. Ha Rabbi Yehuda ha Rabbanan. In one context, he's following Rabbi Yehuda, who says hanacha is ma'akevet. You need to is not ma'akevet, you don't need to put it down, just needs to see the temple. Harabanan, and one is view the Rabbanan, says that it is ma'akevet, you need to put it down. And the next 10 lines are going to be saying, how do I know Rabbi Yehuda thinks hanacha is ma'akevet, you need to put it down or you can't eat? My Rabbi Yehuda, which Rabbi Yehuda are you talking about where he says hanacha is not ma'akevet? The Tanit teaches in the Brayta, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda said, and the background for the next three lines that's important is, if the pasuk repeats a requirement, you need to put it down. You need to put it down. The assumption is it's ma'akevet. If it only says it once, it's not ma'akevet. It's ideal, but if you didn't do it, you can eat the bikurim. So Rabbi Yehuda is about to show, even though it says hanacha twice. Anyone ever done the laning around the bikurim?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, great. So it says twice. It says vahanicho. I'm guessing that because it says twice vahanicho. So that sounds like it's ma'akevet, because it says you need to put it down. You need to put it down. And what Rabbi Yehuda is about to do is say, oh, when it says v'nicho one of those times, it doesn't mean putting it down. It means something else, which shows you it's not ma'akevet. That's going to be our proof that Rabbi Yehuda thinks it's not. So I'm Rabbi Yehuda in the Brayta. Rabbi Yehuda said, the first word in the line is v'nachto. V'nachto. All right, it says v'nachto and v'nicho. V'nachto says, and you should put it down. Zo tenufa. Putting down means, what's tenufa? Waving about. And you might say, I'm pretty sure putting it down means putting it down. What makes you think it means waving? And that's actually what the Gemara says. You think that means waving? Maybe it means putting it down. That's what the word means, putting it down. Kashu Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, no. As it says v'nicho already, you should put it down. Harinach Amar, it's told you to put it down. Hamani mekayim v'nachto, why does it say v'nachto? Zutinufa, to tell you to wave it around. Full stop. So we know for Rabbi Yehuda, Hanacha is not ma'akevet, because it only says it once in the Psukim, and the other time it said v'nicho, it's talking about the tenufa. So, mantana depale gale Rabbi Yehuda, who disagreed with Rabbi Yehuda then? We're going to say, oh, there is a view that both of those, v'nicho and hanachto, are talking about hanacha, which means it's ma'akevet, and it's this figure, Rabbi Lazar ben Yaakov, he, the Tanya, as it teaches in a Brayta. V'lakach ha-kohen atena miyadecha, It says, and about the Bikurim, the Kohen should take the basket miyadecha from your hand, limit ala Bikurim shetunum tenufa. So that teaches us that it needs to be waved around. How do we know it needs to be waved around? It says the Kohen needs to take it from your hand. Every time I take something from your hand, I wave it around. So we're going to have to see where he learns that from. But what do we know from Rav Lazar ben Yaakov is, where does he not know tenufa from that it needs to be waved? Where could he have learned it from? Where Rabbi Yehuda gets it from? V'hinicho. He doesn't get it from there. So it says v'hinicho. For him, it says twice you should put it down. So for him, we know hanacha is ma'kevet. And the Gemara is now going to say, well, my time's Rav Lazar ben Yaakov. How does he know you need to wave it around? Because it says the Kohen should take it from your hand. Acha yad yad mishlamim. It is a gzeres shava where the word yad appears twice. Tivhach v'laka kohen tel meyadecha. In the context of Bikurim, it says, and the Kohen should take it from your hand. Ketiv yadav tevienet ishe Hashem. And in the context of shlamim, it says, his hands shall bring it to the fire of God. In the context of waving around. Makan Kohen af lahalan kohen lahin balan af kan balim. And in both contexts, both the Kohen and the Baal need to know the tenufa. Haketzad, how do you have two people waving it about? Menich Kohen yadav tachat yedei balim umeinif. The Kohen puts his hand under the balim's hand and they shake it about. It is worth noting that the commentary say the Kohen can't put his hands under the Baal's hands and shake it together, because that would be a chatzitza between their hands and the bowl. It means that one's got to hold the top of the bowl, one's got to hold the bottom of the bowl as they wave it about. And that's learned from Shlamim, so it says Hanacha twice in the context of Bikurim, tells you it's Ma'akevet. And
was there a standard bowl?
There does seem to be a standard bowl that had a particular shape. I was actually going to try and find a diagram of it. In fact, the Kohen might have a diagram of it, where there's like a lib or a lid or a lip. I was looking for the word lip there. Where there's a lip to the bowl, and the bowl would hold the lip, and the Kohen would have his hand underneath, and they would kind of move it about like that. Again, why do you need to shake around things? Why do you need to put them down? Why do you need to bring them to the temple? Why do you need to read anything? This could all be kind of a in-depth look at what gratitude means. And again, it's worth noting that in the context in which we're talking about being whipped, because you didn't wait to express gratitude over food that you are permitted to eat. Talking about a Kohen eating Bikurim before the recital, before it's put down, which you can imagine the subject we spoke about yesterday on Shabbos was potential corruption in the cult of the Bet Mikdash, in the behavior and the ritual. And here we've got, if a Kohen has food that he's permitted to eat, that other people have brought to them to express gratitude, to support the institutions of religious life, you better wait. Otherwise, as a priest, you will be lashed for violating these moral laws. And again, who gets hurt if you eat this fruit before I've said anything? Nobody is hurt. But we see this as fatal to the fabric of the social welfare. And we're willing to enforce it. Again, would be willing to enforce it today? That's another question. But that's where we're up to. And next time,
the farmer would feel cheated. He schlepped all this way, and like the Kohen doesn't do
right, it's like if somebody is making a siyum, and you come to the meal for the siyum, and they make the siyum, then they want to give a speech, and everyone says, okay, you carry on, I'm going to go and eat. Well, I mean, this happens at dinners all the time, where the speakers are there while the food's out, and I don't know what the etiquette is here, and I know that it can be different in different places. Is it normal to eat during speeches at a dinner here?
Yes.
Right, okay. That's what I figured, because I see people doing it, so I don't feel rude doing it, but in England, I think it's a big problem. If you hear anybody moving a fork, like in a speech, they can shoot you out back or something. So I don't know if that's true. But to some degree, that the farmer schlepped the stuff all up here. Now he's going to say, part of Bikurim, Arami Ovid Avi, and he hears people chewing behind. Oh, hold on a minute. I've come all this time ready to speak. So maybe it's not just about expressing gratitude, but it's about respect for fellow citizens as well. And they are supporting you. And if somebody delivers you, if you're on tzedakah and someone gives you a check and they want to ask how you're doing, you say, thank you for the money, have a good day. You know, give them time of day. Interesting.
You know, the other difference between this case and all the other cases of Isser seems to be, it's not really in the Kohen's power to make this food mutter.
Right, meaning you've got somebody else.
People. Like it's contingent on another person's actions, which is different. I haven't figured out why it matters, but it seems to be different because it's not in his control. It's not like the Kohen can matter it, can make it. He has to rely on the other person to do it. And it's possible the other person brings it and says, yeah, no, I'm going to read this later this afternoon, and there's nothing the Kohen can do. or I don't know how to read, or whatever it is, whatever.
Right, that's really interesting, right. Meaning, in the other context, when you're waiting, Masa Sheni, you're going to eat, and you have to wait until you get to Yerushalayim, and that's dependent on you. And if it's Hanacha, it is also dependent on other people to some degree, but they put it down. And here, I guess, you've got to wait for them to read. So I guess that kind of compounds the idea that this is entirely about you as a Kohen recognizing that other people have brought this, and you're entirely dependent on them. And you shouldn't just think, oh, this is automatic. It's a tax. They got to pay it. Meaning this is real work, real labor, and I should give them the chance to celebrate and not just feast on their food. And you can imagine it injects a certain amount of checks and balances on the religious power over other people. Fascinating. Okay. Next week we'll pick up, I know it's like 2 days before Pesach, but if we do this next week, hopefully it also won't take so long, and then we'll have a chance to finish by Shavuos with maybe another week off. We're not going to meet the Sunday right after Pesach, which is 2 days after Pesach. I know some people are away, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to prepare over the course of Pesach for that Sunday. But the following week we'll meet, and I think I'll meet one more week in between then and Shavuos when we won't meet, and then we'll finish up in time Shavuos. But I thank you.
Thank you.
Benching.